Welcome to Ever Beyond on Free Thinking Radio.
So the music is playing, and that sounds like this. Not too loud.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Tune I made up.
Call in on 646-649-0866.
No. You don't need to call in. We're quite happy to take Skype calls and questions from the chat room, but the call-in won't work tonight because we've not got anything on blog talk radio, useless thing that it is. Anyway, so tonight, welcome. I have a very special guest. I have Emily Elizabeth Windsor Cragg with me, and Emily is not only a imaging expert. She worked for Rank Xerox for many years and rose up through the ranks of Rank Xerox and became a lecturer and trainer. And you got to the top of that line, didn't you, Emily? And yeah, I mean, it's a very kind of practical task, and you grew through that, and eventually you became the trainer, and did you become the top trainer? In a what program? You got trained in a what program?
A CETA program. It was a job training program in Washington, D.C.
All right.
And I did that for a year. And then I got remarried and started a business and had more kids. You know how the life of a woman can just kind of get jerked around?
Yeah, very quickly. Yeah. That's the way. It's the way the world spreads around and bloodlines get moved around, and that takes us to the other thing, is that you have a curious bloodline, don't you? Oh, hang on a second. I'm very, very sorry. I was talking to you kind of almost privately. People could hear you through my headphones. I'm very sorry. Thank you very much, Nick, just alerting me. Are you okay there, Emily?
Is this working better?
Yeah. No, it's not. It wasn't your problem. It's my problem here. They could hear me through your. They could hear you through my headphones.
Oh, okay.
But yes, there we go. Thank you, Nick. He pointed it out to me. So, meanwhile, could you roll back and say you had a very curious bloodline there?
Well, yeah, the Duke of Windsor came out to Yosemite National Park with the Duchess in the spring of 1943, and he got a hop over to Fort Huachuca, Arizona, where my natural mother was an army nurse, and he was inspecting the troops over Memorial Day weekend 1943, and my mother was his entertainment, you know, how these army guys provide entertainment for a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was born 9.5 months later in San Francisco. But I didn't find out any of this until I was in my 50s.
No.
Yeah.
But you do, I mean, if people were to look a picture of you, you do look like the Queen's cousin to me. I mean,
And you should see my boys.
Yeah.
You should see my boys. My son, Edward, who was born when I was 38, his picture at 22 looks exactly like my dad's at 22.
Wow.
And he's got all the same gifts, you know, they have the same... The same kind of characteristics, so that's how I really had to acknowledge that, you know, all those crazy stories I heard as a kid really weren't true after all.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, and you've also been finding that in your life, various characteristics, some like a family trait of,
yeah,
of rising to a point of leadership, just naturally.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I guess they say the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree.
Mm.
And my papa was an excellent speaker, and he was very, very beloved, but he was also very gullible and naive in a way, and they tricked him, and he fell for it, and that was the end of his reign.
Mm.
It's a very interesting story. I'm in the process of, you know, getting it documented to the point I can put it in a book.
Yes. Hey, you know what? It's a bit like JFK, isn't it? It's like after JFK, like they put the mob back. The mob got in.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, isn't it, with Britain?
It really is, yeah. The mob got him. Well, who got him was his sister-in-law and his father. He and his father were at loggerheads from the time he was 16 years old.
Mm.
They never saw eye to eye. He was a confirmed Anglican, and his dad was deeply into the occult. And so, you know, they were on different sides of just about every issue.
Mm. And the occult, you mean Freemasonry?
Deeper than Freemasonry. Briefly, we talked a little about the difference between Luciferianism and Satanism.
Yes.
Okay. His father was into Satanism, and not just the Luciferianism. I think David is what he was called in his family. He could have dealt with the Luciferianism okay, because Luciferians just want to see reasons obtain, and you don't have to be stuck with dogma and doctrine. Rather, you work things out on an individual basis. You know, you can arise from reason itself. The age of reason comes from Luciferianism.
Mm.
But George V was into Satanism, and he was into cocaine, very deeply into cocaine until his coronation. And, oh dear.
Well, that must have been a bad day.
I thought we were going to talk about the moon.
I know. Let's go. Well, look, that was a great introduction as to kind of where you're placed, Emily. You've done a lot of study of the British royal family's history and the dark history, and you know, you got a kind of insider's view of who was into what, really, haven't you?
Yeah. It's really been an education, because their philosophy was taken over by the Luciferians during the time of Queen Victoria.
Right.
After Albert died, she went in deeply into the psychic, and that's where that whole movement just kind of, you know, blossomed.
All right.
From her reign on. And so after that, there's been this dichotomy in the royal family between the ones who are really Christian and the ones who are into the occult, and to what extent they're into the occult. And that has a lot to do with the history of the two world wars. And what happened to Nikki and Willie? Tsar Nicholas and Kaiser Wilhelm were both first cousins of George V. And at one time, they dressed like triplets. They were so close. And then all of a sudden, here's Nikki dead and Willie practically exiled. How did that happen? You know, has a whole story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Britain has an incredible history going back to the Stone of Scone, and nobody in Britain knows about the Stone of Scone anymore.
No, the Jacob's pillow.
That's right. And you know, the one that was sitting under St. Edward's chair in Westminster Abbey wasn't the real one, because it was 100 pounds too light. That's the one that was taken to Scotland. They never have recovered the one that weighs 458 pounds.
Wow. And that was the original from Jeremiah?
That was the original. And it had marks on top. You know, it had been eroded on top, so that you can tell that the one that they replaced it with is not the right one.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I got into that too.
Meanwhile, Emily.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch,
the solar system is in danger. There's incoming objects, there's upcoming objects, there's downgoing objects. What is going on out there?
Well, we got to start with history.
Okay.
And it's a history that we've never been told about because the church in the 4th century decided we didn't need to know. That's when the church, whoever the church was, Constantine, set up the Bible canon, threw out the Book of Enoch, and inserted the epistles of the Pharisee Talmudic scholar Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so that's when the real censorship began, about 4th century. And so we've had a very consistent cosmology officially ever since. The world isn't just still flat, but if you go too far, you're going to fall off, and there's nobody else anywhere else in the universe. We have yet to find. Even Carl Sagan said, someday we'll find them, you know? Someday we'll find them.
One day we'll find you.
Yeah. NASA today has the same Vatican dogma of 500 years ago, that we're the only creation, we're the only ones that exist. NASA.
That's unbelievable.
Isn't that amazing? So everything they do has to be consistent with their philosophy. And so when they design their cameras to put on satellites and on the rover or whatever, they chose certain cameras. If you have a home camera and you take a picture of somebody, there's a grain to it. It's called resolution. Mm-hmm. And your home photograph is going to have a resolution of 300 pixels per inch. Mm-hmm. Okay? NASA's photos have a grain resolution of 72.
No.
Yes.
Screen definition.
So pictures are all grainy to start with. And there's no way to fix it, because if you try to print one of their pictures, what you get is mud.
Yeah.
Okay, no resolution. Secondly, there's the lens exposure aperture. How long was the lens open? I have found dozens and hundreds of NASA photos with multiple exposures piled on top of each other. And then NASA paints over something and they call it a picture. Okay, so there are two possible reasons why a picture has multiple exposures. One is that the lens opened and closed several times and they didn't move the film. That's one.
Yeah, which is
the
like,
other.
You wouldn't expect a camera to do that.
Yeah. The other is very interesting. It's called interdimensionality, and it's the reason why digital photographs show ghosts and orbs and ETs that you can't see with the naked eye. And the reason is all the light, the diffraction of light is constant throughout the universe. And we know that there are different precipitating frequencies where matter coalesces. You know, here we are, a third density, and there's a fourth density, and a fifth density, and a sixth density, and at each of these levels, matter coalesces around certain particle frequencies. Am I making any sense at all?
In the same way that we may agree that is the central color of red, and that is the central color of blue, etc.
Okay, cool.
Or right. this is the central frequency of the note of A. Yeah.
Okay.
Very much about what I talk about on the show, indeed.
Okay, so we can take a digital image because it registers all of the waves of light, and we can get several levels of dimensions on it. We can get a multiple image because we have the third D, the fourth D, and the fifth D in it.
Yeah, in other words, that we're picking up information on other octaves that are not visible to the human eye, but are visible to the camera, the digital receiver.
Yeah, exactly.
CCD, that's what it is. Yeah.
Okay, so in the case of Mars photos, the rovers traveled supposedly very slowly, and they did time-lapse photography, and so quite often there were compound piled up images just because there were so many exposures. But I also found on planetary and moon photos something that puzzled me and still does. Wherever I had a long view, I would have great big people, and I'd have middle-sized people, and I'd have little teeny tiny people, all in the same relative space.
Hmm.
Yeah. I can't explain that at all.
But surely when you take a photograph, or when NASA takes its photographs, they're exposed as negatives, and then they're developed and printed, or developed and
No, that's not how it works with digital.
Oh, well, of course, with digital, yes. So, are you talking about digital images that are being sent back that are multiple exposure?
Digital images, multiple exposure, and then before they publish them, they sort of blot out what they don't want you to see.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, they either paint on some color, or they take black paint and paint something off, or, you know, cut out part of it, or make it too tall and not wide enough, or too wide and not tall enough.
Yes.
Or they don't develop it, or they overdevelop it, or they invert the development. There's all kinds of ways to make a photograph look like it ought to, but not tell you anything.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking of another possibility, is that in order to mask a particular feature that may have just kind of walked across the camera, for instance, you would overlay the two images and take the area where that entity was, and take the area, that same area, from another image, the adjacent image, if you see what I mean. So image A contains my beast that walks across the camera. Image B contains a blank field, but like a few meters ahead. So you cut out the middle of that one, and then you adjust the size of the second one so that the two layers match, and then you erase the outside.
Okay.
Would that be a possibility?
That's photoshopping.
Yeah.
That's shopping.
Well, I don't have to do that, you see.
That's not what I do. No. I don't cut and paste on a photograph, ever.
No, but
I stretch it, I squish it, I change the colors, I make it lighter, darker, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I never cut and paste.
Yeah, but NASA would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Mm. So anyway, meanwhile, so we have our images that are being distorted by NASA. Now, are there any space agencies that we can trust their pictures? What about the Russians or the Indians?
Nope, none of them. They all do it the same way. They're all on the same page.
They're all on the same page. So
We have treaties with ETs, and they give us high technology products, and what we do is what they tell us to do.
Mm-hmm. And is it likely that these treaties are going to end anytime soon?
No.
Hmm. And here's a question, because this is a whole other level, right? If you have a complaint against somebody else in the galaxy, is there like a world court? Is there a galactic court? Is there a ninth sector court, or wherever we might be?
Yeah. You can yell at the Ancient of Days.
Uh-huh.
They're on Pavona. The only way you can do that is if you're a telepath.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not real responsive. Well, they like the Anunnaki.
Right.
I yell at them a lot. If you want to know more about them, you can read the Urantia book.
The Urantia book. I've heard about that.
Yeah. Ancient of Days in Havona and all that is in there, and that's where I found out that basically this galaxy has been organized as a hierarchy, and that the doctrine of consent of the governed and common law by consent is really quite alien to this galaxy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought this was the galactic way. That's quite disappointing to find out.
No, it's the other way around.
All right. So, but does this mean that this is this why we're here, in order to start that a more sovereign kind of individual movement spreading back out through the galaxy?
Well, maybe we have a toehold and maybe we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't look right now like we're doing real well.
Give me some hope here.
Well, that's coming. That's coming. It's getting bigger in the sky every day.
Yes, the big orange thing, the purifier. You see, I've been looking at these Hopi prophecies, because I think the Hopi prophecies are very clear. There's no kind of oofy foofy about them. They don't seem to be metaphoric. They seem to be very kind of plain, you know. And then you'll see a star in the sky, and it'll look like a tiny red dot at first. And no doubt you've read that one, haven't you?
No, I haven't read the Hopi prophecies, but
okay.
That's okay. You know, there are a lot of versions of the same thing.
Yeah,
the Urantia book.
Well, what it's saying is that the Hopi prophecies are saying that there's going to be a blue, what they call the blue star Kachina, which some people are saying already has happened, which is Comet Holmes. You know, this thing that went poof in the sky suddenly a few years ago. That was pretty, you know, pretty strange. And then that there are the twins, and then there's the red star Kachina. Which will appear as a tiny red dot in the distance and then get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they call that one the purifier.
Okay, so, well, I just learned something this week.
What's that?
About this. And I got on my profile page a photograph from a guy by the name of Philip Hasbrook.
Right.
And I had never met him before, but he sent me pictures of the sun with these bodies around it, and what seems to be the case is that all of these, the red and the blue and so on, all show up at once. All show up at once, and they're here. I've been seeing the blue for quite a while. They're all here now, and it's like a traffic merge, you know, every 3,616 years, these two systems do a traffic merge and then go their separate ways. And the big part is they call it Elenin, but in the other diagrams I've seen of it, they call it Wormwood, and it's a brown dwarf that glows a dull red. And in the NASA little, what do you call it, simulation that shows how Elenin moves around.
The JPL one.
Yeah. I noticed that when Elenin is the same distance to us as our sun, on the graph, the distances are different. So I asked my friend, how come the distances are different? And he says, that's because Elenin is below us, and the sun is with us on the ecliptic.
Yeah.
And so I asked, okay, well, then when we're on the same, when we're at the same distance from Elanin as we are from our own sun, then what happens next? And it comes between us and our sun on the 26th of September.
That's right.
And that's when things get interesting.
That's right. When was the last time this happened on Earth, Emily? I think I might know the answer to this.
During the Exodus, 3,616 years ago.
Yes. Worlds in collision.
Yeah, I read that when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, I ate that up. Man, I ate that up. His other books weren't as good, but that one was exciting.
Yes.
You see, I was brought up as a half Catholic, half Jewish, so my mum was in charge, so I'm brought up Jewish. And so we had this festival every year, this Passover thing, and it was a kind of dry thing. But now, having read that book, it totally has brought the whole thing alive to me. It's like, you know, well, I'm part of a science fiction film now, like Deep Impact.
Well, yes, and I was studying the Bible in those years, and so I read through the prophecies of Genesis 3:15 and Daniel and Ezekiel and Revelation, and it all matched.
Mm.
It all matched, and so it's been 45 years. I'm waiting for this to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really does feel things. So, you are of the opinion that Elanin is the brown dwarf we've been waiting for.
Yeah. And it has Nibiru with it.
It's
and it
one
has
of the moons that goes around it.
Yeah, orbit.
Yeah, and it's otherwise known as Nemesis and Wormwood. And Planet X, or whatever that might be.
Yeah, they keep giving it different names.
Yeah, but it's the same thing.
I have to tell you a little story.
Tell me.
Several months ago, NASA sent out, they said, I think it was the Cassini, but I don't know if they were that specific, to an quote asteroid by the name of Hartley 2.
All right.
And they sent back a whole bunch of pictures of Hartley 2. And so I went to work on these pictures of Hartley 2 because it looked just too much like artificial light coming out of the back of that drumstick.
Oh, well, it looks like it looked like the planetarium thing. It's
okay.
like a dumbbell with lumps at either end, yeah.
Okay. So I did a color study of those photographs, and I found out that not only is that drumstick attached to a surface, it has a pool next to it and steps going down and architecture behind it. It's an asteroid the way the Rock of Gibraltar is an asteroid. It's attached to a planet, duh.
Yeah.
It's attached to a planet. How you can call something an asteroid that's attached to a planet, I just really don't know. But you're welcome to go to my album, Other Planets and Moons, where I put all of those Hartley 2 pictures, and you can look for yourself. It's attached to the ground with a pool of water and buildings around it.
Hang on. You're saying that what they're saying is an asteroid is an edifice stuck on some other planet.
Yeah. Now, why would they do that?
Yeah, where'd they get that from?
It boggles my mind.
Yeah, anyway. So let's just have a quick look at this. In your photos, what album is it?
It's in the Other Planets and Moons. And I just updated that one yesterday.
There's only 103 photos in there, right? Okay, yes, so I see.
It's down at the end, down
at
the bottom.
Oh, I see. So what it looks like is that they're looking down on a tower that is standing on top of something, rather than...
Yeah. So I did a color study of the surface that it was standing on.
Uh-huh.
You had to use false color because... I had to make up some colors to get any sense of depth, and you can see it's a plaza. They have steps. They have a wall behind it. The light is artificial. I'm sorry. I don't understand why NASA would do something that blatant.
So it's just like a kind of a statue or something, maybe a... Alright. And they've turned it round so it looks like it's in space. Because it does the when I first saw the picture that has been going around on the web of this thing, the angle looked wrong. You know how you feel comfortable when you've got something that's set right?
Yeah.
And everything about it was like, oh, I wish that was upside down. I can't quite see what... I can't make it out. So I see your point. So if we were to turn that round 90 degrees, we would see it as we're looking down on something standing on... that is poking out of the ground. Where do you reckon they got that, then?
I just simply can't even fathom what they think they're doing. Mm. Maybe that's a gizmo or schlivitz that's coming in on Nibiru. I don't know. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do some pretty strange things. Another thing I've discovered in a lot of the particularly moon photos, the early Apollo photos that were never really developed very well, that on the top part of the photo, it's very, very fuzzy, and so when I relight every single pixel in it, it's very tedious to do that. But then I can see that there are shadows in the top of the photo, and when I finally get them into focus, the picture was taken from behind a picture window, and the camera records the reflection of the people standing behind the photographer in the picture itself. Yes. So you can see who was standing behind the photographer in the top of these Apollo photographs. And they aren't human.
Oh, right.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's even cooler, yeah.
That's really cool.
Because I was imagining you would say, oh, and they're just they're guys standing around in NASA kind of uniforms and things. Okay, so they're not human.
They, you know, they're all bearded, and of course our astronauts are not all bearded, but their clothes are different. They're human in the sense that they look like us physically. You know, we wouldn't scream if we ran into them in the hallway.
Yeah.
But their presentation is not the way our astronauts present themselves. The uniforms were wrong. They were heavily bearded. They all wear hats. Everybody wears a hat.
Hmm.
I don't know why everybody wears a hat, but they wear hats.
Well, the Sumerian pictures of Anunnaki, they all had hats and they all had beards.
Yeah, right.
So...
And on Mars, from the rover photos that I have been able to detect, everybody wears a hat unless they're about to be executed. And they have gallows, and they have constrictors, and they have ways of offing people there, too. It's not a planet that I would consider a vacation spot.
Great place to raise your kids. Yeah, or not, yeah. Wow. So, meanwhile, so they've got this fake photo of a lump that might actually be something standing on a stage or something like that, or some building or other somewhere, or a piece of rock somewhere, that is purporting to be what they're calling Elenin. They're trying to pass that off as Elenin.
No, that's the one they're trying to... pass off as Hartley to the asteroid.
Hartley to the asteroid, right. Okay, but okay. What we're probably looking at is that Elenin is Nibiru and Hartley 2 is one of the planets.
It's something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, let's, I mean, because I've been very confused over the years because there's all these different names for it. There is a red dwarf star, okay, which... Okay, let me tell you my experience, Emily.
Okay.
A few months ago, we do this orb experiment. You know, you were talking about digital cameras being able to pick up, these other beings and things. So,
right.
with Journeys with Rebecca and the chat room, in the middle of her show, she plays some music, and we all orb out. You know, we all imagine ourselves in this woman's garden, and she takes photos on her digital camera. And lo and behold, there's lots of orbs all over her pictures, and we try to kind of make symbols in them and try to identify ourselves. You know, so it's a kind of a very light-hearted, playful. But semi-scientific experiment to see if we can actually kind of identify ourselves as orbs in her photos. And I'm in Scotland, and she's in North Carolina. We travel from, we're from all over America and the UK. So we were doing that. Okay. So you with me so far?
Yeah.
So we do this. And, that night there was a particularly good piece of music. I was feeling playful, and I was dancing around, zipping around, and I suddenly thought, oh, I'll make a geometric form. So I made a triangle, and then I made a tetrahedron. I was just playing. I'd never done this before, and I thought, wow, because when I made the tetrahedron, it kind of sprang into being. It was like it made an echo of itself, like little tetrahedrons inside going down and out. It actually seemed to have its own life, as opposed to an artifact of my imagination. Anyway, so I thought, that's really cool, and I thought, oh, I'll turn it. So it was spinning around very slowly. And then for some reason, I thought, oh, I'll make another one. And it was upside down, and I made it spin the other way, and then I brought them together. The next thing that happened is that I saw this great flash, big flash of light, and suddenly I was in a spaceship. Now,
cool.
Like I said, I was just playing around, and I thought, wow, I'm in a spaceship. How cool is that?
Yeah, but you weren't just playing around. You were doing something you didn't know anything about.
Yeah, I didn't know that I could do it. but apparently this is called a Merkaba. And it's a form of transport, and it was really cool. So anyway, I took this little spaceship out, and I thought, oh, I'll go and see the comet. So you know, I was just kind of looking around. I couldn't see it. Couldn't see anything, probably because I was looking along the ecliptic. And then I thought, right, oh, well, since I've created a spaceship out of nothing, and I can travel through space, I can see if I can travel through time as well, you know, because I can do anything, haven't I? So I zoomed up, and I think, right, okay, I'm going to go to October, the end of October. And lo and behold, at the end of October, I see this enormous red thing. It's like the pictures of the sun. You know the Soho pictures of the sun, that orange one.
Yeah, yeah, the
305. 305, yeah. A little redder than that. In fact, much deeper red than that. But still glowing in that way. And with a fiery surface. And I thought, wow. And then I saw it passing by the Earth, and I saw these like little particles coming off it. And in my head, I heard iron filings. So it was like a magnet picking up iron filings as it passes the Earth. And at the same time, I heard the word cleansing. At which point, the song finished. Because remember, we were just playing around in this woman's garden. We were just trying to be orbs. So I zoomed back in time, sort of undid the whole process and found myself back in my chair. And I thought, wow, did anybody else see that? Oh, apparently.
Did anybody else see that?
The woman who took the photos did take a photo of one orb that was making a tail. There's a pale kind of bluey-greeny colour. That's kind of me. There was another guy who saw a flash.
Oh.
Now, I read somewhere that there is an agency somewhere that's got a kind of radar that can see these flashes when they go off, because, you know, they like to keep an eye on things. Because I did some research after that, because I was just playing around. I had no idea. I have this form all over my place. The star tetrahedron thing. I love it. Anyway, the essential part is...
You mean the two three-dimensional triangles?
Yes.
One inverted inside the other?
Yeah, and spinning in opposite directions.
Okay, that's a Merkaba.
That's a Merkaba.
Okay.
Somehow it creates a vehicle of some kind. Now, okay. Whether it's like in the dream body or in the etheric body or higher or where, it seemed kind of real-ish, and I could definitely sort of direct it with my mind, and it was quite an amazing experience. I've not really done it since. I think I need to do it with a group.
I wouldn't mess with that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to the point. The point is that I saw this thing, and it was like the biggest magnet you've ever seen, zipping by the earth and dragging up iron from the surface. Would that be the sort of thing that you'd be talking about?
Well, if it's the biggest magnet you've ever seen, what is it likely to attract?
Iron.
How about our planet?
Is our planet iron?
Yeah. The crust, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The ground crust, yeah. Is iron. And isn't it, if it's coming between us and our sun, isn't it likely to just peel us off our sun?
It could.
And then establish our planet in an orbit around itself?
Hmm. So that's one possibility, that we become attracted into the orbit of Nibiru.
Yeah. That's Wormwood, also called Elenin. Nibiru is its planet.
Right, yeah.
So if we get attracted into an orbit around Wormwood or Elenin, then there's a matter of, will it keep Nibiru or will it drop off Nibiru here and take us where Nibiru was?
That's a possibility too. The Hopi prophecy also said something about this. I think it's maybe even the Blue Kachina, that it will cause the Earth to rotate the way it should.
And should.
Yes, because you know in Velikovsky, he says the Earth turns around. When what was east is west, and you know the sun rises again in the west.
Well, yeah, but it's changed several times.
Yeah, I have a theory.
Before the pyramids, it rotated in a completely different style altogether. It used to rotate in an infinity sign so that every part of the planet had the same amount of sun and the whole planet was paradise. That's
yes.
How it was paradise.
Yes. Now, I have had deep thoughts about this. So, one of my thoughts, you see, that I'm thinking about, you know, how do we contain the Mayan prophecies, the Hopi prophecies, the Christian prophecies, the Chinese prophecies, how do we contain them all? And one of the interesting things that I came up with is that the Mayans say that their calendar ends on that day, on the 28th of October. It's the end of this wave thing. And what does that mean? Well, I believe that all those cycles are the cycles of the processions of all the different planets, so that they all arrive at the ecliptic at the same time. Remember, we've had three eclipses in the last 3 months?
Yeah.
That's because the moon is on the ecliptic as well as the sun and the earth, isn't it?
Hmm.
So it's like everything is returning to a point, a kind of reset point. And then, here's another thought. Perhaps the moon is dragged off in the red planet's orbit.
Possible.
And then we would have nothing that would recognize what we knew as time anymore. The planet
except
would be rocking.
Solar cycle.
Except the solar cycle, indeed. But the planet would, like you say, rock up and down, and the whole Earth would get the same amount of sun. And that sounds like a kind of nice thing, but our days would be different. Our days would last, well, I mean, it would get dark, it would get light, it would get dark, it would get light, it would stay light, the sun would spiral around the sky for a while, and then it would get dark and light, And, you know, we wouldn't be able to say, I'll see you tomorrow. We would have to redefine our year to determine how long the year was, because that would change as well, because we'd maybe slow down or speed up. I don't know about the speed of orbit. The speed of orbit is to do with the rotation of the center of the sun, isn't it?
Well, not only that, but our orbit isn't an orbit, it's a corkscrew, because the sun is moving in a linear path.
Of course, that's going, yeah, that's traveling in a direction.
So, and yes, so we're not in a stable orbit around the sun. The sun's moving, so we're corkscrewing around it.
That's right. And that's what the Nibiru planets are doing as well.
Right.
It's corkscrewing around Wormwood. And so all these corkscrews, because that's it. When all the corkscrews meet, that's the end of the Mayan calendar, and that's October the 28th, and here we are.
And I think after that, everything is going to change, and there's a new eon, a new era, a new dispensation, a new, you know, the precession of the equinoxes starts over again, but things are going to change at that point into a new permanent situation.
Yeah. I'm feeling very hopeful about this whole thing. And the other thing, you know, if it is a big magnet, Emily, what happens to all the weapons of war? Up in the sky. You know, what I saw maybe is what might be iron filings from a distance could be aircraft carriers, tanks, guns, big iron. It's all iron. All the weapons of war are made of iron, aren't they?
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Wouldn't it?
I certainly wouldn't argue with that idea. I don't know if it's true or not, but I like it.
I know, it's just these are just thoughts that I've been having. You know, what would be the implication? Knowing that we've already been through this 3,500 years ago at the time of the Exodus, that, just to fill in for the audience who aren't aware of this, this is a book by Emanuel Velikovsky, who was a contemporary of Einstein's, and he studied the astronomical records of all the different world cultures he could get his hands on and discovered that something happened at this time. And he's saying that a comet came past and eventually became what we call Lucifer or Venus. But we don't know whether this is the same thing as what we're going to be experiencing. However, it was a large body, and what was the 10 plagues were actually the fumes and the streams from the comet's tail as it passed by us. Now that, Emily, is happening on September the 29th, is it not?
That's absolutely so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's all going to happen again.
And guess what? When does this body hit perihelion?
The 19th of September. It's at the same distance from us as the sun is. Is that what you mean?
Oh no, the closest it gets to the sun is when it crosses the ecliptic plane, which is September the 11th.
Aha. September the 11th.
So we got all these dates, you know. Go ahead.
This experience has occurred to this planet since the Anunnaki first came here 400,000 years ago, 19 times. Mm. It's happened 19 times on this planet since humans have been here.
19th nervous breakdown. So this is the 20th.
Well put. So we're still here.
Yep. And from what I can understand, we may have a problem remembering things because some people are saying that the particles, that memory is dependent on the magnetics. And if we have huge magnet, it might be like dragging a magnet across a videotape or a hard drive, you know, which are magnetic memories that we'll lose our memories, basically, and we'll forget who we are.
Then we better write all this stuff down day by day if we want to keep it.
Hmm. How do we remember how to use pen and paper?
We'll relearn that. We'll relearn that over time. But if we don't write it down every day, journal it, we're going to lose it.
Yeah. Well, we've got video as well. I wonder if there's any way of preserving video.
Yeah, will any of that work?
Hmm. Well, you know, it could... you know, every hard drive, every computer runs off a hard drive, and they're magnetic. If you, you know, if that's, if that gets scrambled, then we don't have operating systems, we don't have servers. But there are a lot of servers that use memory, just regular memory, RAM memory. They may survive, like your data chips, you know, memory sticks. That's
memory sticks. Will the computer still be able to run them?
You might not be able to boot one up if it's got a magnetic memory in it.
Yeah.
So optical, DVDs, CDs, they'll survive, possibly. But then, you know, then there's the EMPs. I was going to say MP3s. Then there's the EMP blast that we're going to get from the sun as this thing comes through our solar system. There's going to be a lot of electrical activity this year, isn't there?
The traditional societies were able to write down their experiences. Mm. Have you ever read the Colbran?
The Colbran Bible?
Yeah.
I've heard of it again.
I have it somewhere. I've been looking for it. I've lost it. You know, I hide things from myself. I only got a little ways into it, and then I set it aside. Where'd it go?
Yeah.
it also has an account of this particular kind of end of the eon experience. It's the end of an eon.
Mm.
Yeah.
I you know, I find it a very exciting thing because certainly I've been working towards. I've always had this feeling of not belonging to the society that I'm in the present. That I belong to the future, and like I've always been into science fiction films and all of these things. And now I realize that that's not science fiction. That's documentary. You know, they were just telling us what they were doing.
Well, that's a lot more real than this craziness we're witnessing to, because leadership has become so negative in its intention to pursue ruin and trouble and harm that it's very hard to identify with our leaders anymore.
Exactly, because they all seem to want to destroy grab for themselves and all of that stuff. There's no honor anymore. We have no heroes, have we?
No. I've had some conversations with my cousin over there in Buckhouse,
mm-hmm.
Mostly written, and I've, you know, asked some questions that my papa probably would have asked, and she skillfully avoided responding to anything that wasn't absolutely trivial. Leadership seems to have forgotten what it ought to consist of, and that is the movement toward what is just, which is to say that good gets a good outcome and bad outcomes get corrected. They all seem to have forgotten about that.
Noblesse oblige, the duty that a ruler or a leader has to the people, as opposed to the duty that the people have to the leader.
Under the covenant of the Stone of Scone, okay, mm-hmm. I read this just yesterday to somebody. The king, the monarch, is not supposed to have too many horses or too many wives or too much money or too much property. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's considered a sin, all right? Well, cousin over there has 1.5 trillion pounds worth of gold, 6 million acres of real estate, and 204 billion pounds at Couts Bank as of about 3 years ago. That's kind of plundering your own people, you know?
Yeah, it's bleeding everybody dry.
Yeah, and no wonder that Britain is in dire straits economically, the one lady sitting there with all of it.
Mm.
And she's now just a corporation, you know.
Yeah.
She signed 6 Lisbon treaties that signed away all of her leadership initiatives, and she is now only a corporate CEO, but she kept all the money.
Well, that's got to stop soon as well, hasn't it? Hey, have you heard about the tungsten scandal?
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me because nobody's honest.
Yeah. It just gobsmacks me, you know. Just really surprises me that whoever it was, probably the Rockefellers, thought that they could get away with it.
Well, they've gotten away with. Look what they've gotten away with.
True.
And then there's the Rothschild Zionist movement, which has very little to do with Judaism.
Mm.
That doesn't follow either the organizational statutes of the Pentateuch, let alone the common law statutes of the Pentateuch, but yet they call themselves Israel, they call themselves Jews, and they behave otherwise.
Yes, well, this is an interesting thing, because my grandfather... had red hair and blue eyes and was Polish in origin. Well, not, you know, he was a Polish Jew, which, you know, they probably came through there. So I don't know which side of the, you know, whether they're the Ashkenazis or the Ashkenazis who came from Khazaria. I'm going to have to get in touch with my cousins who've done some genealogy to find out exactly where they came from. But I've been on the edges of these two kind of hugely guilt-ridden religions and things like that.
Me too. My adopted family were socialist, Rothschild, communist. Atheist, but they were with Jewish names, and they spoke Yiddish, and they ate kosher, and they were involved in all of the political movements, the progressive movement, the communist movement, the socialist movement. Eugene Dennis, former general secretary of the Communist Party USA, was my uncle, and so I'm intimately familiar with what it's like to be in a Zionist environment.
Yeah,
I grew up that way.
Isn't that amazing? We just kind of crawled our way like out of that morass.
Yeah. But then when my Jewish mother became a widow and she remarried, she married an Italian Catholic whose family was from Italy, and they only spoke Italian, and they were Catholic as they could be. You know, it was an adventure. This life has been an adventure from day one.
Absolutely. I mean, you were dropped in.
Dropped in!
Yeah, right in the moment there. You know, you would be what we would call a white hat. Involved in all of these different families and groups and things like that. Because you would see the things that they were up to, but you weren't part of it.
Yeah, and I couldn't identify with it, and so I'm looking over my left shoulder or praying to God, saying, "You want me to what? You want me to what?
Yeah.
You know, what am I doing here?" Yeah, and a lot of this has been just figuring out, well, what is going on, because it all just seems so wild that the people are not told anything that leadership is doing, not for real.
No.
And the pictures coming back from space are all altered and fixed, so you can't see what's real. And medical science is more of a risk and danger to people's health than a help. And, you know, I was a trained dietitian, and as soon as you go to the hospital, the bean counters, the accountants, tell you have to give people food that's going to kill them. And I have a video on my page, and the Truther Girls did it, and it's just perfect. It says everything's a lie.
Everything's a lie. I love that one.
It's a lie. So everything we get from NASA that they have put through their process shows nothing.
Mm.
Because that's their policy. I always thought, because I've been doing their pictures for about 5 years now, I thought that they just didn't know how. You know, it took me 2 or 3 years of writing to them and saying, you know, if you would just do this a little better, and if you just fix that, and you get this, see how much better it looks. I thought they were stupid.
Oh.
Well, it turns out I'm the one who's stupid, because it's a matter of policy.
Yeah.
So what do?
Well, you create your own pages, and isn't the internet wonderful? Isn't it amazing that we have this incredible free facility? I mean, if it wasn't for Facebook, I wouldn't know you. I wouldn't be able to speak to you. You know, you wouldn't be able to put out to a group of people who are actually listening to you.
Yeah, that's actually true. That and Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
And YouTube, yeah.
It's just amazing. And all for free, because we're all broke. Yeah, I still don't get that bit about all being broke.
Well, I'm retired. Okay, I worked 45 years and contributed to Social Security. So I'm entitled to spend my time the way I want. And what I do is spend 14 hours a day at this computer.
Yeah.
Because information is very, very dear. And because people's time, people have no time to really consider. And so my profile page is a place where people can go and find out what's going on. I make it a news column, and I have 5,000 friends. I have another 500 waiting, and they can't get on. But I provide a news service is what I do.
Yeah. It's great, because I see things on there that I don't. You know, I've got quite a few different channels of networks that I'm connected with, but I see things on your site that I never see anywhere else, and it's great. It's a wonderful place, especially the recolored pictures of the moon and things like that. And have you seen the one that's going around the net at the moment, which is? You see these little disc-shaped craft traveling over the edge of the surface of the moon.
Those are old. Those are old, old, old.
All right, it's a couple of years old.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, the Apollo program had a lot of those, and they keep releasing them few by few by few by few. You know, the tyrannical tiptoe, they call it. They tiptoe information out little bit by little bit. The last few days, the new mayor station in Antarctica has been a big deal.
Oh, yes. Do tell us about...
I have put up a whole album of new mayor station photos. And this very, very nice guy, Philip Hasbrook, is the one who gave me an explanation for what I was seeing that made more sense than anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently, here we go. I've got his comment.
Right.
Okay. In these pictures, you have this bright white ball. It's just dazzling. And he says, the bright one is possibly Nibiru. It can't be seen by the naked eye. It is hidden in a dust cloud of melted rock and iron. Only when the sun shines directly on it, as now, it becomes like a reflecting mirror. Only with infrared night vision camera, as above, could it be seen. The gray object following it is the white large body in another photo, and we suspect it's an icy planet. This guy is studying it. And so this is a part of that small solar system wormwood with Nibiru going around it, having a traffic merge with us.
Yes.
And this particular one that is so bright is bright because it's covered in dust and the sun is lighting it.
Right.
He thinks that one is Nibiru, not the wormwood. So that's what I'm not going to argue with this guy. He knows a lot more than I do.
Mm. Yeah. So there's...
he said, to get a flare like that, you need a source. Okay, to get a such a huge flare, you need a light source behind, and it could be that the sun is lighting it from behind somehow.
Right, and then there's have you seen the stereo ahead pictures of a body that could well be Wormwood?
I don't know what you're referring to.
All right, so you know the stereo, the Soho stereo spacecraft. That
Wait a minute. You mean on Soho?
Yeah, on Soho. There's the stereo, ahead and behind.
Yes, and it's been showing up there.
Yeah, it was shown. He proved it. You could see it through June that it matched up with the JPL's orbit diagram. And you could see that through the month of June, this thing crossed quite slowly. It's quite magnificent.
Yeah, I did see that. And, of course, the mainstream media, which could really be teaching us a lot about astronomy and really being helpful in coping with the changes that we have to be able to endure, is distracting us with just all kinds of stuff. They're not helping.
They're not helping at all, are they? And
no.
This is probably partly a deliberate policy. But are you aware of the Webbot? Have you come across Cliff Hyen, the Webbot?
Every once in a while I run into it, and predictions. You know, I'm a data digger. I just look at the past and try to interpret. You know, data.
Yeah.
I read Webbot stuff, but I don't hold to it.
It's interesting.
What does it say?
Well, he's not convinced that we're going to be that there's any planetary bodies coming past us. Although he has a thing that is called unknown energies from space and alien wars, memes that have been coming up in his reports for quite a while now. But it's the unknown energies from space, I think, may also be part to do with the same energies that are coming from the sun that are changing the decay rate of carbon-14.
Wow. Well, I know that I've been playing around with Google Earth, and I have been able to find undersea facilities, particularly in the Gulf of Aden, where there are 300 warships, and I know there's an ET war going on there. There's a Stargate there. I have found Stargates on many planets, and apparently there are natural Stargates that are used like wormholes to convey souls from one planet to another without having to get on a spaceship, okay? Mm. And so I know the one at Aden is a Stargate and all the warships are around it. I know Iraq had a Stargate. I know there's another Stargate down in Antarctica. And I hear there's one up at Mount Shasta. And we have a secret government that is very paranoid about all of this. I've heard about an ET war down in Antarctica. So, you know, this is all just floating around over our heads. We have no way to verify. We have no way to dismiss or discount.
Yes. Have you come across Ed Grimsley? He's the 3D night, not 3D night vision, third generation night vision man.
No.
High resolution infrared binoculars. And what he's been doing is he's got a couple of sets of these. They're about $5,000 each. You know, you don't buy them easily. But he gets people out to his ranch where it's nice and clear, and people can see space battles literally happening above
them. Oh, wow. Well, what about John Leonard Walson?
I don't know him. So what's he?
He's in Scotland, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah. Scotland or England. Butlin Cat's a good friend of his. So's Gridkeeper, but he's very sequestered. I tried to write to him because He's one of the few moon telescope photographers who gets motion into his pictures. And I just ran across a woman last week who has, I don't know what kind of camera she has, but when she takes a video, there is motion and movement in it. I've never seen that before, quite as dramatically. And I can get such wonderful depth out of taking screenshots off of her video shots. I get beautiful depth. So I've got to bother her some more and find out where she got the camera.
And you then take those and enhance them further, don't you?
Yeah, I work on them. If I can't do anything with them, I just send them back and say, sorry, I don't have enough skill. But sometimes I can really make something clear that wasn't clear before, and that's all. That's what I get for doing this is learning something.
Yeah, lovely. So, there's the moon. So the moon might be made of steel, mightn't it?
It's built like a Chinese lantern with ribs, and it's got a hemisphere inside of it and several compartments inside of it. It's actually a space station that is covered in basically glass, so that on the inside they have light. And it's got a lot of water, and it's got several races. I've seen a black, Asian, and white people there, and cars and roads, and everything's on the moon. The moon's about the city size of the city of San Francisco, very, very similar in size. It's nothing like NASA says. Nothing. NASA's moon info page makes me just fall over laughing. It's so absurd. And do you want me to go into that?
Yeah, because, I mean, everything we've been told is a lie.
Everything is a lie. So go to my...
So where do we go? Where do we go for the truth, Emily? So
go to my Apollo Forward album, and the first three photographs tell you the story of how big the moon is. Okay. A camera on Mars took a picture of the Earth and the moon in the same picture. Okay. Right. And the Earth, we know, is 8,000 miles in diameter, right?
So they say.
Give or take. 8,000 miles, give or take. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Earth is 8,000 miles. And I have a shot, and then I have a little moon here, which is about 10 inches away from the Earth.
Yeah.
And so I take the 8,000 miles diameter of the Earth, and I mark it off, and mark it off, and mark it off, and... It is a little more than 8 measurements from the Earth to the moon.
Right.
And that means it is 64,000 miles to the moon. Now, is that simple enough? The moon has a perfectly circular orbit around the Earth. That is an established fact all over the Internet.
Right.
It doesn't have an irregular orbit or elliptical orbit. It's a perfectly circular orbit. It is always the same distance from the Earth. That's 64,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
It is not 226,000 miles away. Okay? It just isn't. Now, in its size, when you start looking at the details on the surface, you realize it's really very small. I would say it has to be less than 10 kilometers in diameter. It's a little bit of a thing. It's built. You can see how it's built. Google. I have a whole Google Moon album on my free science page. It's all Google Moon, and I've re-rendered Google Moon photos so you can actually see what's in them. And you can see where the vegetation is, and where the water is, and where the struts are, and where the compartments are. You can see some of the craters go all the way in, and some don't. It's a space station. And it's peopled,
mm-hmm.
and it depends where you are on the planet Earth, what the size of the moon is where you are. In my third picture, it shows a solar eclipse with the eclipse at maximum, and the moon is in front of the sun. And in one case, the moon is covering up the sun completely, and in another one, it's about 7/8, and in two more, it's less than half. So the moon is a different size depending on where you are on the Earth. And it's also oriented different depending on where you are on the Earth. If it was 226,000 miles out, we would all see the moon in the same orientation all the time. But if you see the moon from the southern hemisphere, it's upside down and backwards from the northern hemisphere. That's because it's so close that its orientation is affected by where you see it from. So it's only about 10 kilometers in diameter, and it's only about 64,000 miles out, which is to say it's where some of the satellites are.
Yeah, so with regard to how the sun fits in with the moon to complete, you've got your eclipse there. Do those numbers also work out with the angles?
I just got those four photos at random, because I collect photos. I have 40,000 photos on my hard drive, and I just noticed, well, how could the moon be different sizes depending where you are on the planet? That just raised a question for me, and that was before I found the other two pictures.
Right.
That show that the moon really is a lot closer than they ever told us, and that's probably because of the effect it would have if telescope and video cameras were redesigned to be able to focus on a 64,000 mile distance. Mm. I think we would see too much. We'd be able to read a license plate on the ground if cameras were allowed to be developed to the point where you could actually see what's on the moon. They can't let the camera business get too good. Mm. Otherwise, their policy is compromised.
I'm fascinated by the picture of the Earth next to the moon. But
and the original link is there, and it's still there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you pull that picture up, and the original link is there. You can go to it.
Mm.
NewYorkNerd.com, WP so so and so on. Okay. I kept the original link.
Yeah, you got the link on the bottom of that picture there. Excellent.
I do my homework.
Very good. So that's fascinating. That is a fascinating thing. So looking up the moon. Now I was in a gathering this week, and we were talking about the moon and its esoteric significance, and we were talking about its influence on the sign of Cancer and of belief systems, that it's the moon governs our kind of belief systems, what we've got from our parents and what we believe is so, you know, the basic kind of axioms in which we operate with, and they're not always true, like, because we said, you know, everything we've been told is a lie. So what he's saying is that during this full moon, it's the time where we revise all of that information and bring it up into the level of not knowing anything, not believing anything, but to know everything that we think.
Yeah. That's my work, is to figure out what to know and what not to know.
That's right.
I'm just a scholar. I'm, you know, I don't, my degrees are in a different area, and I finished my professional life as a teacher, and now I'm just a learner. So I'm always looking for new data. I'm always looking for new sources of photographs. I'm always asking people if they have some pictures they want to show me that I can work on.
Mm.
And that's how I spend my time now.
Wow.
When I'm not researching into British politics and the Stone of Scone and what was the relationship of Hitler to the whole mess in World War One?
Yes. do you want to say some stuff about that? That sounds interesting.
Well, no, not this time.
Not just now.
Maybe let's get together again sometime. Yeah. But that story will take a long time.
Yeah, let's talk about the Royals and their German origins.
Well, that's mine too.
German connections. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, well, let's and if I can have some objectives and goals to actually speak to, so that I can substantiate what I make claims about, that's why I'm a little reluctant to say anything right now, because sure. I want to prepare myself so that I don't sound like an idiot.
Because there can be some rather outrageous claims made about the royal family, and probably a lot of them are true, but not many of them are provable. Are they?
Now, you'd be surprised what pops up in terms of evidence. You'd be I have been very surprised.
Yeah.
Connecting the dots has I've dropped my chin on the floor more than once.
Yeah. And would that also bring in the murder by decree thing?
The murder by decree?
Have you seen that film? It's supposedly about Jack the Ripper.
Yes, and of course that's just an official BS version too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack the Ripper was part of it.
Yeah, so that would be a very interesting program. A very, very interesting program to talk about that. But
yeah.
So let's just take one last look out there and look at the sun and all of the things that have been going on with that. Because certainly this last week there was a pretty big flare, and these things floor me, Emily, because I get a headache for 3 days when one of these lands.
Okay, go to my album called Skies Above and Earth Underfoot, and I'll show you something.
Okay. All right. Albums. Skies Above and Earth Underfoot. Here we go. All right, I'll just post that again into the chat room so that everybody can follow that. Listening.
Okay, and the first picture is the Wormwood system, and the second one is the Elenin approach, and the third one is one I want you to look at.
Okay. We see 2001, 2003, 2007. Talk to Cheryl. No. Sorry, go
on. In 2001, the SOHO showed that there is was a mantle around the sun, just the way you put a mantle in a lantern.
All right.
But during the last solar maximum, that mantle was destroyed. Hmm. And so by 2007, it was half gone, and as of 2010 and now, you see the sun is very misshapen and lumpy. The sun either needs a new mantle or it's got a problem.
Hmm. I have noticed myself that the sun is kind of bright. It's really kind of ouch bright, like one of these CFL bulbs. You know, these compact fluorescent. You know, you look at them, and because they're actually powered by ultraviolet light, it hurts to look at this rather dim light. And I have the same feeling about the sun. It's like putting out an awful lot more UV than it used to.
Well, it's also putting out a lot more heat than it used to, which means that the frequency of its light has dropped, and it's consuming more of itself because the mantle is gone.
Right.
I think the sun's days are numbered, and I think that is why Elenin is coming up under us and is going to push us into another orbit.
Right.
Because our sun is not going to last much longer.
Really?
Really. Well, look at the condition over just 10 years. Mm. It has deteriorated terribly in 10 years.
There's something about iridium. And what's the other one? can't remember. It's another element, one of these rare earth minerals, or that we're going into an area of space where there's an awful lot of this space dust that is kind of going to clog up the front of the sun, according to one researcher I know.
That I hadn't heard. But I did put this little group of pictures together, and it does show that the sun, whereas it used to be nice, neat, and round, and its light very uniform, is now lumpy with sprays of very, very bright light and not so bright light, and the heat is much greater, and so the sun needs some maintenance.
Yeah.
That poor gas balloon needs some maintenance.
Yeah. So I'm just having a look here at the next photo along with the coronal mass ejection. 2010, 12, 12, 12, 12. Poof. And are you following the talk about coronal mass ejections on the sun having direct earthquake relationships here on Earth?
The earthquake relationships that I have seen seem to be when I'm looking at Elenin approaching our system. It's so huge. That system is so huge that when there's a three-way alignment anywhere crossing or crossing the ecliptic, we have a massive earthquake. The Japan earthquake on March 11th occurred when one of these alignments happened. The Chile quake occurred when one of these alignments happened. We're due today, in fact, for another alignment quake that has been called for. And here I am sitting on
San Andreas,
in the area of California. I'm only about 5 miles from the major fault. So, I think it has less to do with CMEs and more to do with the magnetic alignment of large bodies on the ecliptic.
Yeah, and that's where everything is. That's where all the action is at the moment. We're all sitting on the ecliptic. That's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, we're all on the dinner plate.
Yes, and I can see. I'm looking at the where is it from the Hungarian RSOE emergency map. It's like the map of all the disasters that are going on.
Yeah,
in the world.
Yeah.
I love that map. Anyway, meanwhile, there's a few volcanic bubblings up in Iceland at the moment, which is not too far from where I'm at. It's quite a distance, but it's still not that far. We had a volcanic eruption last year that made a big mess in Europe and stopped all the aeroplanes flying.
I heard about that.
It was actually incredibly pleasant, to be honest. The skies were really clear and it was quiet. It's lovely. You know, obviously international business travellers might have thought something else, but here in my little remote village, I'm not even in the village. I'm in a tiny farmhouse at the top of a hill.
I am green with envy, let me tell you that right now.
Bless your heart.
I'd love to be there.
Well, next time you're in Britain, you can come and hang out. We can have a nice cup of tea.
Okay, that's a deal. That's a deal. Sold.
So we've got earthquakes. We've got a little bit of earthquake up at the top of that fault there. And quite a lot of activity going on in Turkey. Turkey's been rumbling for an awful long time, and we don't hear about much on the news. But there is a very, very dense pile of earthquakes that are happening in Turkey. So I believe that I have the feeling that that's the top end of a split that goes through the Gulf of Aden.
Yes, I suspect we're going to have a lot more movements of this planet's crust until it sort of re-solidifies with being shaken by these other heavenly bodies. You know, it's It's in there in the dishwasher with all the other dishes.
Yeah. It's a bit like the bones of the skull. That,
yeah.
You know, it will accept a certain amount of flexibility, but it will make a creaking sound as we go. Emily, our 90 minutes is up. It's been an amazing journey. We've gone all over the solar system. We've gone back into the past.
Yeah.
We've had a look at the future. It's been a great deal of pleasure for me to have a conversation with you. And
thank you so much for inviting me. I have enjoyed our visit just immensely.
Excellent, excellent. So do you have any? Do you have a website that people can go to, or is it just your Facebook page?
Oh, I have four. I have four, but let's, I don't have a website where I put all my photographs, except I do have a slide. I have a slide site where I put a lot of stuff. I have a page where I have all my links. I think I have about 30 links sites where I put stuff and places where I moderate and my own sites. And can I stick a copy of that page on your page so you can
absolutely
see?
Absolutely. I'll drop it into my blog as well so that people who are listening to the archive of this, because we get an awful lot more people on archives. All the people in Britain. I make this show at 11 o'clock so that people in America can listen to it, but and also that people in Britain can get it. But nobody stays up as late as I do. I'm a real late bird. And so people will hear this again and again this week. It'll be repeated 5 or 6 times. So they can go to my Ever Beyond blog, and I'll have all of the links that you give me, and I'll post them into there.
Okay, well, I have it as a note, so I'll share that note to you.
Yeah, on Facebook, and I'll recopy that.
Okay, cool.
Fantastic. Emily Elizabeth Windsor-Cragg, it's been a real pleasure, and thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll see you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.